All right, welcome to the first ever episode of Rich and Turbo's Heavy Half Hour. I'm Rich. You can find me on Twitter at FuzzDoomRip, and you can find me writing for Musipedia of Metal, and all over the other socials. We also have the Walking Encyclopedia of Stoner Rock, the Fuzzmaster General himself, Turbo. Say hello, Turbo, to everybody.
Hi, I'm Turbo. How y'all doing?
There he is. I'm very excited to be able to be doing this with Turbo. And we wanted to do something where, back in the day you had your radio and that's where you got all your information, all your music and word of mouth and eventually MTV and you can figure stuff out from there and then things like MySpace. And now we have all these socials and hundreds and thousands of records coming out. So Turbo and I wanted to do something where we could help you weed through all that, get to some really killer stuff. Talk about some of the influences that were out there on albums that really were the precipice of bringing this new music to us. And then an interview. And we're going to do an interview with Todd Severin today from Ripple Music, which we're super excited to bring your way. So, Turbo, let's kick it off. Let's talk about what our featured record this episode is going to be.
It's Dead by Dawn. Out of
Absolutely.
where are they from? Port Orchard, Washington.
Yeah, somewhere up in the Pacific
Yeah.
Northwest.
This is a killer album. It'll probably be stay strong throughout the year for us, and probably be one of our top year-end albums.
Yeah,
This
totally
is
agree.
it's a very soulful record. I mean, it's heavy, but at the same time, I feel like it's very soulful.
Yeah, I would agree. I wonder if that comes from that article that I recently that you sent me, where I learned the lead singer is the son of the original bass player from Parliament. Is that what we
Yeah,
figured out?
Scott Davis, I'm assuming, is if is what is said in that article is true, then he's the son of Ray Davis, is it? That was one of the founders of Funkadelic.
Yeah,
Parliament Funkadelic.
that's super cool, and that's not a connection that I would normally make outside of a stoner rock record like that with Parliament and Funkadelic, though I think there's probably more in common than we would think there. I know you're a fan, and that's something that we should definitely talk about before. Yeah, but I agree that record is currently my number one for the year. It was number two on my Doom Charts list, and I mentioned where you could find me. I'm also a Doom Charts contributor. But listening now, I think it's probably the record I've listened to the most this year.
Oh, most definitely.
What's your favorite track on there?
I want to say she, the strange one, but Journeyman, Downhill, Dead by Dawn. I love them all, man. I don't think
Yeah.
there's a bad song on this album.
I think you messaged us saying that the your favorite track changes. But like you said, soulful, and I totally agree. You listen to a song like Journeyman, and you know that they're not screwing around. Like this is comes from the heart, and they are experiencing the stuff that have experienced or experiencing the stuff that they're singing and writing about, which makes she even more crazy of a song lyrically, especially. But yeah, I love that record. It's definitely going to hang in there in my top records for the year.
Yeah, I love in the lyrics under Journeyman under at the end. It's got Bridge One before Solo, and it's like never wanted to start up, but I always got my guard up. I've earned all this clout, so look out. And then in parentheses, it says fucking rock kick.
Killer. Yeah, it's just so great. And you listen to Downhill and something happened where then they just sat down and are like, you know what? All this shit going on in my life, I need to put this pad to paper and record something to this, because you can feel like it's totally real life what they're singing about. My only complaint about that album is that it's too short. I need
Oh
like
yeah.
three more songs on there.
It could be needs to double up. Be excellent. And
Absolutely.
it's got the great sound thanks to Tony Reed, who
Absolutely.
is the this genre's godfather, I guess. I don't know, man. He's everywhere. He does everything, and everything he does is great.
Yeah, I hope we can get him. We can get him on the show at some point. Yeah, he's everywhere, and it's funny you say that. Like when you look at like the records for February on my list, I actually had number one of as the Big Scenic Nowhere record, which obviously he is all over as a performer in this case. But I think between all of us, we see Tony Reid involved in any capacity, then it's definitely going to pique our interest and be something that we want to make sure that we get our ears on.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
Cool. Yeah. So I think anybody listening to this, check out the Kitsa record. It's pretty amazing. It's on Bandcamp right now. There's still somehow some of their vinyl is still left, even though they only made 100. I can't believe that there are some left. So totally worth it. Get your ears on that. You will not be disappointed at all. Cool. Anything else you want to add around the Kitsa record?
No, I can't think of anything right now. I mean, it's just, one of those excellent, solid albums that everybody should check out.
Very good. Very good. Cool. So moving on to our classic album of the week. And I think we'll do something like a classic. We'll do maybe a lost or something that's influential to the stuff that we love, the fuzzy, the hard, the heavy, the stone, or the desert, the doom. And that's why I love to have this with Turbo, as I mentioned, the walking encyclopedia here. And we're gonna talk about Blue Cheer. Let's dive in, Turbo. I know this was your suggestion, and it was an excellent one. So why did you pick this one as our classic that we want to talk about?
Because it's so heavy, it's one of the for coming out in the late early mid 60s, whatever, 60s, recorded in 67, and it's just a bunch of teenagers who just wanted to just play loud and heavy, man. It's just, I don't know if it really gets its due. A lot of people just know this album, which is, is it Vincibus Eruptum? I think it's Vincibus. I don't know if it's, I've seen people say Vincibus or Vincibus.
I don't think either of our Latin is very good, so.
Well, it's made up Latin. It's not real Latin. But anyway, yeah, most people just know this for the Summertime, the Eddie Cochran song that they cover. Which, why am I drawing a blank right now?
Summertime Blues, and it was interesting that article you sent me said that they probably saw The Who, and The Who hadn't recorded it for their live record yet, but they said they probably saw that live somewhere and said, "I want to be loud and crazy like The Who," and that's.
Yeah, it was the, they went to the Monterey Pop Festival, which had The Who and Jimi Hendrix. I think that was, were two big influences on them. Where before it was a six-piece band, and then after they saw Jimi Hendrix, I think Dickie Peterson, the bass player, lead singer, main songwriter, decided he wanted to be a three-piece. He wanted to be a power trio instead, and that was the way to go. So
Yeah,
it was
and
him.
the sound that comes from those three guys, it's pretty amazing. And a lot of people call this the first metal album. I don't know, maybe it's heavy, right? It definitely is
It's
heavy.
heavy. It's got a lot elements that can be linked to heavy metal. The way it's just loud, heavy, noisy. That's another short album, though. There's
Yeah.
only three songs that they wrote themselves. Three songs are covers. But yeah, it's just everything you look for when you're looking for something that's heavy is basically their idea was to crank everything up to 10 and be a, be the loud, obnoxious kids and on the block and just go after it, man. And you can hear some, how some of, like some of these noise bands have been influenced by this, because if you listen to some of these songs that around the end of them where they're just going off, you know, it's just like, that's wild. What Lee Stevens is doing on a guitar.
You know, that article you sent to me was, it was almost insulting to the album. Like, they're not virtuosos and they're, you know, they're, yeah, I'm not sure what anyone expected from these guys in 1968, right?
That was one of the things that's one of the most, I don't know, most respected person around there, but in the Seattle, not the Seattle scene, the San Francisco scene at that time, Mike Bloomfield was trying to tell him, you can't do it that way. You can't do this. And then Dickie Peters was like, sometimes you just got to crank it to 10, man. Go all out. Let's do this. You know, who cares?
Yeah, and they didn't, and we're all the better for it. Outside of Summertime Blues, I would say my personal favorite track on that record is probably Dr. Please. And I think that it's probably the one that they go the most crazy on. It's about 8 minutes long, and they just kind of rip it up. And I love it's their own song as well. Like you said, half of the songs are covers. So I love what they did with their own tracks there, especially on Dr. Please.
Yeah, that and Out of Focus and Second Time Around, the end of that is really just chaotic. And
yeah.
Gets real noisy.
Yeah, love it. And you can definitely feel the influence on this one, from what we love. And if you're listening to this, you probably have heard this. If you haven't heard it, you absolutely need to. And if you have it and you listen to it, just kind of listen to it even closer and try to hear some of those influences and some of those bands that you that we talk about that we, you know, mention on Twitter.
I feel like this is a one-off too, because even though the band continues on and they become a four-piece, and Lee Stevens, the main guitar player on here, he decides to quit after the tour and everything because it's just too much. He's losing his hearing and I guess doing too much on the drug aspect of it. And it's just giving him a little bit too much anxiety, I think. So he had to take some time off. So you get Randy Holden coming down on the next album playing guitar. But this one, I feel like, is true Blue Cheer. This is what it's all about.
Totally. The innocence of that record is there, and just like it's endearing because they're such novices at what they're doing, and they're just kind of doing what they think should be rock and roll, and it's pretty killer.
Heck yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, so if you haven't, go listen to the first Blue Cheer record and let us know what you think. All right, Turbo, let's talk about what we're looking forward to in next couple weeks, as we head amazingly towards April already. Anything you want to call out as albums that could be the kits of our next couple episodes? Anything that you want to call out?
Well, April 5th has a couple of albums coming out that are really going to be solid. One of them was going to be White Dog, the Double Dog Dare album. White Dog's a band out of Austin that's kind of likes to do the old fashioned. Hopefully this album will be like the first album. It was recorded on analog. Mm-hmm. It's bluesy, hard rock, that 70s style rock. Well, I've liked the two singles I've heard so far, I really like. So I'm hoping that this is going to be one solid album.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too. The only problem with that one is it's so hard to get on vinyl with being on Rise Above. So
right.
Hopefully we'll have some kind of connection there. Cool. Yeah. And one that I'm looking forward to, that I'm pretty sure you are too, would be the Greek band Acid Mammoth, who are putting out their I think their fourth record called Supersonic Megafauna Collision, which could not be a more perfect title for that band. Just big and fuzzy and slow and doomy and just excellent. I've heard the full thing a few times now, and anybody who's fans of that band, especially the Acid Under Hoof album, which is to me their best, I think you're really going to dig the new Acid Mammoth, and I'm sure that'll be very close to the top of a lot of our
Oh.
lists in April.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was another one I'm looking forward to. And then we got the Ripple Temple of the Fuzz Witch. Apotheosis. So that's another one I'm looking forward to. Different.
It's heavy. It's really heavy. What I would say is that it will vie for one of the heaviest Ripple albums that are out there. But it's not heavy for the sake of heavy. But people like our friend Chris might get a little offended, not offended, but turned off by some of the heavier vocals that are on there. But
What's
the
it?
yeah,
The
but
tag on it is blackened doom metal from
yeah,
Detroit.
that is pretty much perfect. And I think for a lot of us listening here, you know, we're going to talk to Todd from Ripple shortly, but anything that comes out on Ripple, we tend to jump all over and really look forward to. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that one too. And the last one I'll call out would be the new record that's coming out from Elk Witch on the 12th. They're a band out of another band out of Pacific Northwest out of Oregon. They had a I think a very under the radar record in 2022 with Beyond the Mountain that I really dug. The new one is really good. It's called Azimuth, I believe. I don't know why we keep picking titles that we can barely read, but it seems like a trend with us. But yeah, I think the new Elk Witch is going to be something that we're really going to enjoy too. That if you're listening to this, I think it's something that you should go out and pre-order. Some really cool actual orange splatter vinyl out there too. So if you're a you know a record splatter, lover like I am, it's combine that with how killer the record's going to be, I think you'll really like the new Elk Witch too.
Right on.
Cool. All right, so let's I think what we're going to do now is head into our interview with Todd. Obviously Todd is the owner, founder, CEO of what would widely be considered to me and to a lot of others one of, if not the best label in heavy rock today. It's a very cool conversation that we're going to do in two parts. Todd gets into just about everything that he covers with Ripple Music. We'll bring that to you now. So let's go do that. All right, here we go. This is Rich and Turbo's heavy half hour first interview. We want to welcome Todd Severin, the owner and CEO and everything of Ripple Music, which, in my opinion, and lots of people's opinion, is probably the best label in heavy rock today. Welcome, Todd,
Wow.
to the Rich and Turbo heavy half hour.
Thank you, Rich and Turbo. Thanks for having me on here, and thank you for the overly kind introduction. I'm sure there's lots of people who would argue with that statement, but thank you.
Hey, you're
Well,
welcome.
yeah,
Glad
absolutely.
to be able to talk to you.
So we have a few questions that we're going to start with, but for those of the listeners, and I doubt there's a lot, but tell us a little bit about Ripple. I meant there's not a lot of listeners, and there's probably not a lot of people who don't know Ripple who would be listening. So, but both of those things are pretty much relevant. So Todd, tell us just a little bit about Ripple Music and what you bring to the table.
Well, Ripple's a label which started about oh, if you can believe it, 15 years ago now. We started in 2009, as far as when we
Hey.
formulated. Hey, Turbo's here.
Yeah, there he
I
is.
figured something out.
So we formulated in 2009, although our first release came out in 2010, which was JPT Scare Band's Acid Blues is the White Man's Burden, which was a just a killer collection of archival material from a legendary 70s acid rock band. And that kind of set us on motion to, create what I hope is a really cool heavy rock record label, which delves into numerous genres, but primarily things like stoner doom, heavy psych, a little bit of sludge, basically stuff that I like. It all kind of ripple reflects my ears and the stuff I wanted in my record collection. So basically, I just started putting out records I wanted to have because, my record collection's got to keep growing.
Were you part of the stonerrock.com? All that is heavy website. Were you involved in any of that?
I mean that I discovered that kind of in and around the process of getting Ripple going. And so I was a pretty frequent member in the forums, which were really great. I mean, that was a different era of the internet. That was really before virtual reality was in big play. It was MySpace for the most part.
Right.
And
That was my oasis. When I found that website, that was like, oh wow, there's a whole lot of new things out there that I didn't notice, and I was very happy to stumble across it.
Totally right. I mean, and we learned so much great music then, and the fact that all that was heavy was around kind of gave you an opportunity to go from learning about the music to buying the music,
Right.
and then because people just talk, you start learning about so many of these really cool bands that don't have anything out yet, and some of the great labels that were working then. This was a while back, so the bigger labels back at the time were Small Stone was probably the biggest. And you had some of the other labels which don't exist anymore, like Hydroponic Records, and you could probably name some of the other ones. I think Meteor City might still be
Meteor
kicking
City.
around a little bit.
TP came back. Didn't TP disappear for a while and then come back and TP Records.
TP's put out some great stuff. I have a
Right.
lot of TP, but you're right. They kind of came and went, and even Small Stone kind of had a little dip there for a while for, I think, some personal reasons, but it's nice to see that he's back and doing some great stuff. But I think that that whole scene was definitely responsible for the emergence of, I don't know if you want to call us like the next wave of labels that came out, because it was labels like Ripple and Heavy Psych Sounds we started right about the same time, and Totem Cat Records and Black Farm, and there's so many now, like Electric Valley and King Volume and Majestic
Yeah,
Mountain, just great labels.
just all popping up.
That leads to one question I had. It's you see a lot of these bands who go from one label to another, and ones that we've seen, like Mr. Bison, for example, they were on Ripple, then they went to Heavy Psych Sound. Is there like a friendly rivalry with you guys and other labels where you're I don't want to say bidding war, but I mean there's got to be some reason why someone goes to you. I know working with you, the feedback I've heard is really positive, but how does that happen? And are there these friendly rivalries or maybe not so friendly rivalries with some of these other labels that that are out there today?
I would have to accept the fact that things have at times gotten testy, I'm sure, between various labels for one reason or another. But I mean, I don't look at it as a friendly rivalry. I don't even look at it as a competition, because each label kind of has their own set of opportunities or structures that they can present. So, in every single Ripple contract, there is a clause that says the band is free to be released if a larger label comes around that can offer more for them than what we do. Because I don't want them to necessarily be on Ripple and lose out on opportunities that they could be getting elsewhere. So, Mr. Bison in particular, they've actually never been, quote unquote, on Ripple. To like a regular signed band to Ripple. I've worked with them because we did a split with them with Space Trucker, which was a really cool split. And then I helped distribute some of their other records, but they were always on a European label simultaneously. And I was really just kind of distributing their stuff over in America. Great guys, love to work with them. We did talk about this new album that they put out, which is great. But considering that they're based over in Italy, they really wanted to have an Italian label who can support them for their touring in that region. And Heavy Psych Sounds, of course, fits the bill. And we do get our bands to tour Europe. As you know, we have Ripple Fests kind of all over the world now. And we do have connections with tour bookers, and we can do a lot to help a band along. But We're not on the ground per se in Europe booking tours. So for them, it made a lot more sense for them to be on Heavy Psych Sounds. And there was no hard feelings at all between me and the band. And, congrats to Gabe for getting a great band that put out a great record. I feel no animosity towards him on that one. That's all done with blessing. So for the most part, I think that most of the labels don't necessarily get too proprietary about the bands, or at least they shouldn't, because it's really what's going to be best for the band, right? I mean, we're just putting out records. And there's very few of us at this level. And by this level, I mean it's a bitsy teeny weeny level of what, I occupy in the world of music and in the spectrum of record labels. I'm just a speck. But there's very few of us who can offer what you might think of as full service record label stuff, because we're just not big enough. We don't have the resources, we don't have the funding, we don't have the connections, yada 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 yada. Heavy Psych Sounds, I think, kind of built up around the tour booking agency that he had already set up because of his band Black Rainbow. So that was a great structure for him. We emerged out of the Ripple Effect music block, which is something that I started with my friend Pope. Simply to review the records that were in our collections and talk about kind of like what we do, we're on the X, I can't say X, on Twitter, when we're all sharing the records that we're playing with each other, all you're really trying to do is say, "Oh man, here, check this out. This is like a really cool record. I don't know what this is." This is Raw and Alive by Seeds, So that's gonna get the spin today. And we all get on Twitter and we all post it and go, yeah. And you're just trying to spread the word. And that's what the ripple effect was.
Do
It
you
merged.
ever? I'm
Go
sorry,
ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you go, Turbo.
No, I was going to say, do you get the ability to choose producers and engineers, or is that something the band does on their own?
Well, for the most part, and I would say this is the same for all of the labels in our genre, because there's really not a huge player in our genre. Napalm's probably the biggest, right? I would have to say. Nuclear Blast, great label. Mani's label is a great label. They do some really cool stuff. I think they do Graveyard and Cadaver, Witchcraft, some of those bands. So when you get to that level of label, Metal Blade's kind of edged into some of the sound as well, like Gozo's on one of their sub labels. I would expect that that level of label exerts a certain amount of control to some extent, either because they have people they want to work with these bands, or because they have facilities that are at their disposal so that the recording costs can be managed better. The days where you got like $1 million budget and you're going to throw it at a band are pretty much gone at this level. I mean, Taylor can do it, but until Taylor records a stoner rock record, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen for us.
We
So
might
at
be able
our
to get
level,
Dolly to do
well, Dolly, she tried, right? I mean,
it. She did the rock album.
Miley could do it. Miley loves a little metal every once in a while.
Oh yeah, she could.
But at the level of label that most of us are at, the bands generally record themselves. They either record themselves completely because they're capable in their studio space or their rehearsal space, or they go to a local person where they have access to, the studio and maybe better rates. And they're going to use, for the most part, whoever they want to do that. Now, I can only speak for myself going forward. And that is, as we're working with the bands will come to me in one of, several different states. They either have demos and they're not, they need to take it to the next step, or they have something fully recorded, but now they need it mixed, or they have something mixed and they need it mastered. Maybe they have art, maybe they don't have art. So they'll come to me with whatever position they're in and we'll talk and discuss. And then from there, I can step in and help out as I want. For example, a lot of bands don't have mastering done. But within the Ripple family, we have Tony Reed at Heavy Head Studios, and we have Kent Stump at Crystal Clear Sound, and Wolfat and Moss Generator. So I got really great resources to get stuff mastered. And I use both of them depending, because Moss Generator and Wolf Rat are two different bands. They have different vibes. One's a little bit more punchy, heavy rock. One's a little bit more psychedelic stoner, swampy. So I use the mastering that I want to help bring out the sound in the
Right.
band. So that's kind of the point where I'd get involved. And then I can help with art or whatever if the band doesn't have art. Most of the time, bands have pretty a good idea what they want for their art.
Awesome. And wasn't the Obsessed album a little bit of an something you did a little bit more your involvement with the new Obsessed? Am I right with that or?
Yeah, you're 100% correct. The Obsessed was the first time that I've ever stepped out of my comfort zone and became a real record label. Because that was, number one, it's a little bit scary to do something like that when you're working at my level, which is basically self-funding this thing, right? I mean, Ripple, when Ripple's doing great, it's paying all its own bills, which is fabulous. If Ripple needs money, I'm selling off things from my comic book collection to fund Ripple. That's just the way it works. And that comic book collection's getting pretty thin these days. But the Obsessed was a different situation. Wino and I had been talking. Amazing. That sentence right there needs to be like italicized and bronzed and put on a wall, because that's kind of, it blows my mind that I say something like, "Yeah, Wino and I were talking." Because because
Right.
this guy's a legend, right? And I'm just an ophthalmologist in Danville. So it's two different worlds colliding there, but got to know him pretty well. John Gist was really instrumental in getting us together. Matt Bacon had originally set up the introduction, but Gist got us together for a breakfast one day in Vegas, and Wino and I just hit it off, and then started seeing him at several shows, and he and I just kept connecting. And so we worked, of course, on his solo record, Forever Gone, which I thought was pretty amazing for the Ripple acoustic series, Blood and Strings. And then he told me he wanted us to do Obsessed, and that's a different story from them, because he has a professional studio set up that he works with Frank, and Frank, of course, is a legend because he did a lot of the Metal Blade stuff from back in the days when Metal Blade was really forming, and he's a great guy, by the way. So yeah, for that one, I did it all. I had to pay for the recording, paid for the mastering. Probably paid for the art. Don't really know about that one. Can't remember. But it also meant I was part of the process. You guys could probably get the thrill because I see the three of us had kind of be in the same stage in our music. Maybe I put out the records, but we're all just still music fans and geeks. So you can imagine the thrill of like getting demos from Wino, on the new Obsessed, and
Oh,
getting
yeah.
original mixes from Frank, and asking for your input, and you're all, "Oh, good, good job." It was awesome. I was thrilled to be a part of
Find
it. And
yourself
then,
saying good, good, good over and over and over.
yeah, like I'm gonna step in and say, "Well, guys, I really think that recording is," but that's not my specialty. I'm not a musician. I have a bass guitar here. I don't know if I could still even plug it in, but I have one over here. I'm not a musician. I'm not a I don't know theory. I don't know any of that stuff. I don't even know necessarily that I have what you'd call good ears. I just know what I like, and I know what moves me. And that's kind of what's guided me through every step of Ripple, for the good and the bad, for the mistaken albums I might have done or the great albums I've done. What was really satisfying with this one, though, is considering my level of involvement, is to hear the finished album, Gilded Sorrow. And to see the response and to see what's going on with the band right now, as they've toured Europe, they're touring America, they just announced a tour to South America. And to get a letter from Wino, which I just got like 2 days ago, kind of, stepping back and thanking me for,
Oh,
my
that's
small role
awesome.
in all this, is pretty gratifying.
Because that's a really great album. I was really impressed with it. You did
I
a
think
really
the
good job.
addition of the second guitar, just added a little extra, punch to what it was doing. It frees, frees the band up to really, dig in there. And I agree with you. I thought it was an amazing job.
Oh, yeah. Going to be one of the best albums of the year.
Dude, are you ready for this? I while we're talking, I just got a message from Wino, and he said, he's talking about the new video. 25,000 views and climbing every day on the video, exclamation point, exclamation point. So he's
Excited. That's
excited.
awesome. That's
Yeah.
awesome.
Wino?
I feel like he might be a good guest here, Todd, at some point too, for
Well,
our yeah. I
oh
don't
yeah. I
He
mean,
would be great.
he's endlessly entertaining. I mean, come on, the guy has seen and done it all. And I will stand firm that with the passing of Lemmy, Wino has assumed the mantle of being the rock and roll lifer. He's the legend now. And I hope that he gets that recognition.
That's awesome. One of the things you just mentioned was an albums that you might have regretted. I won't ask you which albums you regretted, but what are some of the albums that you passed on that you could have put out that you
Oh.
regret to this day?
That's a good question, and there are some. And a lot of it is has to be taken in the context of the moment. And what I mean by that is that I have a whiteboard over here, which kind of keeps me organized and has got my schedule. And because of the wealth of music in the scene, it's really easy to get overbooked. Because, oh, that's fucking great. Of course I got to sign. Oh, that's great. That's awesome. You're always hearing new stuff. And that's the fun, right? Is to constantly be hearing new stuff and finding stuff that you want to put out to the world. So sometimes a band will come to me, which is just amazing, and there's just no way I can get it out in a year. Like right now, if the band came to me today and they said, I want Ripple, I'm gonna go, whoo. Yeah. How's 2025 looking for you? And the honest truth is, there aren't a ton of bands that have a, because remember, they record and master themselves, right? So they're ready. They're set. And there aren't a bunch of bands that are going to say, oh, gosh, I don't want to put this out now. 2025 is good. Let's do 2026. What the heck if it's easier for you, right? So it's all got to be done in context of how you're going to help the band. And sometimes making a band wait 18 months to put out the record isn't helping them. So there's times when a band has come to me where I just couldn't do it. Usually more than I didn't hear it. So Dool is one of those bands. Okay, love Dool, and they've had a great career. They've done a lot of amazing things. They did come to me. We were really talking seriously, but when the push came to shove, I wasn't going to be able to get it done. Hippie Death Cult, kind of, I think, falls into that same category too. I'd had the opportunity. And then you get fun things too, like you guys know the band War Lung.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good band, right? They do some great stuff. Well, they came to me and I really loved what they were doing. But at the same time that War Lung is coming to me, I have War Cloud and Black Lung on my roster. And so I couldn't take a War Lung. I mean, come on. And I told the guys, I go, hey, yeah, I got War Cloud. I got Black Lung. I can't do War Lung. It's just, there's just, I made the mistake once when I signed the Necromancers and Necromant and put
Oh
out their
yeah,
album in two consecutive months. It just,
that confused me, and I got the wrong one time.
see,
But I
exactly.
love both
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I did it. It's like, oh my God, that first Necromancers album blew my freaking mind. And Necromant, and seeing them play when they were up at the Ripple Fest in Sweden, and they're great guys. It's like, okay, I got to do this. And I discovered the Necromancers. I pulled them out of complete nowhere. They hadn't done anything yet but one video. So I had to do it, but it did cause confusion. It was not the time. If I'd had 6 months apart, I could have done it. But I can't do War Cloud, Black Lung, and War Lung. So that's just an example of some of the bands that I had regretted. And then there's some we just keep missing yourselves. Like Boracho and I have been talking for years. I mean, almost, I don't know, a decade. And yeah, we did the Second Coming of Heavy Chapter One was Boracho, which, was a great record, and Geezer on the other side. And I did help them with something called Riffography, which was like a collection of all their 7 inches and small vinyl bits put together, which was a way to help them get that Second Coming of Heavy music onto another format. But I've never actually done a Boracho record yet. Mario and I have been talking for 10 years. We just have never quite figured it out. But I think that the tides are finally lining up.
All right.
Well, that sounded like a teaser right there, a little bit of a teaser.
I can do a few little drops along the way if you want.
Oh, well, don't worry. We're getting there. We're getting there. To that point, of the things that we know that are coming, and anything else you'd like to tell us about, what are the ones you're looking most forward to that you're releasing? I can tell you, I just listened to the Haunted record like while I was prepping for this, and it's awesome. The Watcher record is awesome. What else are you really excited to bring to the community here?
Well, thank you for both those comments, and I agree. The Haunted was a band that I fell in love with on the earlier records with, Twin Earth Records. Rick put out some amazing stuff. Cabala was on that record label. Haunted, the original, the Bus record, the first one, was a really good record. And then I don't know, he's kind of drifted off, I guess. Twin Earth doesn't. I don't think they put out anything since 2019, which happens to a lot of, cool labels have drifted away, like Cursed Tongue and, Helmet Lady and et cetera, et cetera. It's a hard thing to keep going. I think the only reason I've kept it going all this time is because I'm absolutely batshit crazy. But the Haunted record, I really liked it. And so when they came and contacted me, I was pretty thrilled. So when you're looking at Ripple right now, I kind of think of like, at the moment, I'm kind of doing three separate things. There's the ongoing, set of Ripple releases, which is, amazing stuff with bands that who I've had the opportunity to work with. Like, there'll be a new Cortez coming and a new Foster Mother and Curse the Sun is coming. That's those sorts of bands who have already established a certain following within the industry. New Thunder Horse and stuff is coming. And then, at the same time, there's opportunity to work with other bands that are established that are just coming over to Ripple, like Riff Lord or Haunted. So that's kind of like one part of that. Another part is discovering new bands, because that's still part of the fun. It's the bigger risk. You don't have a sales history. It isn't very often that you discover a band like the Necromancers and the world hears it and they blow up. And Necromancers have become a pretty darn big band. For every one of those, you might discover two or three bands that you adore, but it just gets missed. It doesn't get heard, comes out the wrong time, doesn't resonate, whatever. I mean, I put out that Lowcaster record sometime pre-COVID. I think that is one of the most beautiful records ever. So heavy and so well done. And I think it sold out, so it's not like it didn't do well, but I wouldn't say that that one caught fire. It was just kind of like this little slow smoldering burn, but still, finding the new bands is always part of the joy. So, that's another big aspect. So you guys can see I'm wearing a Snake Mother shirt,
Yeah,
who
that's
are
nice.
a killer band out of the Oakland area, who I've had the opportunity to see and talk with. And Clean and Sober Stoner was like touting them up like crazy, and I checked them out, and they're pretty amazing. They kind of have a High Priestess sound, if you guys know our band High Priestess, but with like this Middle Eastern thread or Arabic thread that goes through it. It's kind of unique, and their show is very theatrical. So I will be working with Snake Mother. Again, love bringing these new bands out. And then there's the third part of Ripple, which I'm really excited about right now, which is the Beneath the Desert Floor series. And Rich, I know you're kind of digging that. And that's fun because that's given me an opportunity to work with bands like, well, as you know, Fireball Ministry. I mean, come on, how cool is that? And there's other bands that I'm bringing out within that series that you may or may not know, but will be, great to bring the spotlight back to, like Rollerball, early stoner band from
Oh yeah, I love
Australia.
Rollerball.
Right. So I'm going to be working with Rollerball, got that coming. Datura, who were a great heavy psych band. I'm talking with some of the Truck Fighters about some of their earlier bands that they were in before they formed the Truck Fighters.
Awesome.
And I mean, the list is actually kind of huge. The list is way too big. But that's a ton of fun for me to be, having the opportunity to work with that level of band as well. So I'm excited all the time on all three fronts, if that answers your question.
Do you want to drop the breaking news that there's going to be a new Salem's Bend record soon?
I spoke to Bobby just last week or so. He came back from the tour up in Canada, and people were raving about him. I mean, come on, they're so good. Yeah, I loved it when you chose. When you were talking to me about songs off that first record for the music on the show, because when I heard that first record, I was in Hawaii. I was on vacation, and I don't even know how I heard it, and I just immediately, I had Bobby signed on within like a minute. It's like, I need this. This is so good. And he's just one of the greatest guys in the world, and he's been an invaluable, asset and friend to me over the years.
I was going to ask you if for the under the desert floor, that was beneath the desert floor, right?
Beneath the Desert Floor, yeah.
Yeah. There was a band in the early 2000s that put one album out called out of LA called Smoke. I don't know if you remember them or not. They had one great album, but I can't find it. I was hoping maybe you might have a lead on it. But that's all I can really remember is the name. I don't think their album had a name at all. It was just Smoke, you
It was
know.
in the late 90s, you said?
Early within the first 2000, mid
Early
2000,
2000s.
yeah, early 2000s.
Okay. I mean, I certainly can look for it. The problem with the band name Smoke is a little
Right.
generic. But that's exactly the purpose of the Beneath the Desert Floor series, is that so many records came out in the late 90s to the early 2000s, 2010-ish, which was before social media. So people weren't talking about this. You might have had a few forums, but you didn't have the ability to really spread the word on this music. And that was also the dead zone for vinyl, right? That was before the vinyl resurgence.
Right.
So a lot of this stuff might have come out only on CD, or maybe it had a very small run of vinyl, which has long been gone. And so I just had the idea, let's just, shed some light back on some of this stuff. Rich, you mentioned how good the new Watchers record is. Before the Watchers, and before the band before the Watchers, which is Spiral Arms, Tim also had a band, White Witch Canyon. And White Witch Canyon, I think it came out on Cosmic back in the day. Another good label. Killer stoner grooves. And so White Witch Canyon is actually going to be the next, this is a little tip for you guys. It's going to be the next Beneath the Desert Floor chapter to be announced.
Right on.
Very cool. Breaking news again, Turbo. We're making history here with our first episode.
Great.
You want history, you want breaking news. One of the fun things I've done recently, as you guys know, has been working with the Hermano guys and helping them to re-release their back catalog. And we do have all four of their back albums that we're going to be re-releasing, remastered, remixed, all done under the ear of the band, who never were happy with the original masters. And I think most people will agree that the remastered version of Only a Suggestion sounds better than the original.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, that was David Barrick who did it. And then we have Ty Tabor of King's X. Oh, how am I mentioning these names? He does the mastering on it. So I expect all four of those records will come out sounding kick ass. But you want breaking news? How about unreleased Hermano?
Oh, yeah.
How about stuff from back in the day that's never seen the light? Or how about a brand new Hermano song?
Bring it.
Yes.
Amazing. Yeah.
I'm just, speculating.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Since I'm too cheap to pay for Zoom, for real, and just use the free one, we have about 4 minutes to go before they cut me off. So I want to maybe pepper you with a few questions. Turbo, what else you got for Todd?
Well, the one thing was the comp that I was around Christmas time. I was like, how come there are no Doom Christmas songs? And I was like, wouldn't it be cool to have a compilation of just Doom stoner heavy rock Christmas music? I was gonna see if you were interested and if that was something that ever crossed your path or if that was something you were interested in.
I think it sounds killer. I mean, the only real good heavy compilation I know is was a hearing aid, which kind of had some leanings in that sort of
Oh, boy.
direction. And I think Halford put out a Christmas record, like 3 or 4 years ago. I wasn't a fan of it, but I would love it. I mean, I personally think that Drummer Boy is a total doom song, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could definitely have some fun with that. But the key is, the bands make the song their own. They have to really fuck with it. You have to really keep the intent, and they have to be serious about it, because you can't do it just as a joke, right? It would come across as a joke.
Right.
You'd have to have bands that can take it seriously and can really play with it to make it their own. I think it'd be kind of fun.
Is that something where you try to match something up with a band, or do you just let the bands do, decide on their own, or and take their time, or?
The way that the Creedence Clearwater Revival compilation came out, Burn on the Bayou, is that
Oh, yeah.
it was during COVID, and I was on my first vacation after working my ass off, trying to get the business through COVID. And I always had this idea that I wanted to do a compilation, because a lot of these tributes are pretty cool. But I wanted to do a tribute of a band that had really great songs that people would not be afraid to fuck around with. Because, you do a Sabbath comp or a Thin Lizzy comp, and people can give you their best Sabbath or Thin Lizzy because they're so revered, which is cool if that's what you want. But I like it when bands make the songs their own. So what I did is, there's a Facebook group where I just have connection with a lot of the people who are in the Ripple family bands. I just put it out there. I just, hey, what would you guys think about doing a Ripple compilation of Creedence Clearwater Revival? And with no exaggeration, within 1 hour, I had 31 songs. Bands had proposed 31 songs. I had the cover artist, I had the interior artist, I had the title. It came together in one morning while I was still having coffee. And so the bands all just jumped on it and chose what they wanted to do. And I think that's the best way, because it's going to resonate with them. If I tell you, I want you to do Silent Night, you're like, oh, fuck you. I don't want to do Silent Night. But on the other hand, if you say, hey, we're going to do this, what do you guys think? And a band like Silent Night should be really doomed, right? Like, that should be, so a band like that comes in and they say, we're going to do Silent Night. Now, you probably know you can get a pretty fucking cool Silent Night. So, and now you're getting me excited about this,
That's the plan.
Clouds Taste Satanic did a Christmas EP, I think last year, and it was pretty cool. They did a little Drummer Boy too. It was pretty cool, all instrumental, obviously, but it was a pretty cool listen. Awesome. Well, I feel like we could talk for a very long time, but my cheap ass only bought the free Zoom, so we get what I think is going to wind up being part one and part two of this interview. This has been amazing, Todd. Thank you so much for being
Oh,
the
yeah.
inaugural interview on the Rich and Turbo Heavy Half Hour. So
Loved
gonna
it.
hit you up for guests, and I'll probably hit you up for some press passes to Ripple Fest too. So we'll talk.
Excellent. Excellent.
Thanks a lot, Todd. And
All
thanks, Turbo.
right.
Okay, hope you dug the interview that we did there with Todd. I want to thank him for coming on and being our first guest ever on our podcast. Again, you can find me on Twitter at FuzzDoomRip. You can find me writing for Musipedia of Metal. You can find me actually also as a Doom Charts contributor. Thank you very much, Turbo. You want to take us out?
Oh, yeah, I want you to keep it heavy and keep it loud.
Right on. Excellent. See you guys later. Thanks.